Thanks everybody for sticking around. I know you're all ready for lunch, so I'll try to do it in 5 minutes. Try to cut it in half, see if I can get it done a little bit faster, but can't promise anything. I got a lot of important stuff to present. So this is one component of my PhD dissertation, and the dissertation is on interpretation of sex pheromone trap data and the factors that influence it. So some of the factors that would influence sex pheromone trap data would be management practices. So this is one of the components of the PhD. So many of you might not know much about pink hibiscus mealybug. It's highly polyphagous, feeds on about 300 different species of plants in 75 different families. It causes the typical mealybug damage that most people see, well, from all the other mealybugs. But in addition to that, it has a feeding symptom in which the ground meristem doesn't differentiate into the palisade and spongy mesophyll layers, and it creates this gnarled looking top at the terminal called bunchy top. So it'll gnarl and distort the terminal, it'll gnarl and distort the flowers, and it gives the mealybug a good place to hide. It's a very good defense and very protective. So the adult female and the adult male are sexually dimorphic, and of course I am, with my PhD, studying sex pheromone trap data and capturing lots of males in South Florida. So this pest, widely distributed. It's all through the subtropics and tropics. In 02, it entered Florida, and it has spread to Louisiana and Texas. It's been, it's still in California a little bit. I think it's pretty much eradicated, but whether or not you can say that it's completely hasn't been determined yet. So, even with its wide distribution and all the research that's been conducted on this pest, it is difficult to control pink hibiscus mealybug, and the effectiveness of controls are not well established. Now, some of you might take a little bit of issue with that, but the fact that it creates the bunchy top makes it difficult for the parasitoids to reach and the predators to reach it. And this distortion may cause some problems for systemic insecticides going up in there, but there's no real information in the literature on it. So the effectiveness of these controls aren't well established in spite of the state-funded biocontrol program that is being conducted in Florida and the Caribbean. So I'm not saying the program's not effective, I'm just saying we need to understand what's going on here a little bit better. So the relationship between management practices and capture of male sex pheromone traps is also unknown. So I'm going to look at effectiveness of the practices and how it relates to capture of males and sex pheromone traps. My objectives: compare the effects of several management tactics on dispersing nymphs, males captured in pheromone traps, and the relative size of populations on the plants after the study, as well as examining the relationship between males captured in the pheromone traps and dispersing nymphs and relative size of the population of plants under these different management tactics. Here is the host plant we used. We use Hibiscus rosa sinensis. This is the president cultivar. It exhibits the feeding symptoms very readily, so it's a highly susceptible host, I would consider. Here you can see the bunchy top and the colonies out in the field. So what we did was we infested the host, each plant, with five females attached with the egg sac. So there you can kind of see the female and her newly laid egg sac. Here's five. And we'd place it right on the terminal. And this was done for 4 consecutive weeks. So we got all different developmental stages. So we had multiple developmental stages. And we did this for 25 plants. To create semi-field conditions, we use these exclusion cages, which were 1.5 meter tall, 1 meter wide, 1 meter deep boxes. The bottom was paneled, and the top had a hinged door. And we used no-thrips insect screen to keep the parasitoids that we used in and the ones that are in the surrounding environment out. So the exclusion cages were effective based on our post-trial survey of the plants, and they didn't have any of the biocontrol agents from the outside environment or ones that were introduced in the ones that shouldn't be. So we use the Jackson trap for our sex pheromone trap. It is easily serviced, quickly processed, and the number of males captured per area is probably as good or better than the larger traps based on a study we did in 07, well, a while ago. We also use walking dispersal traps to capture dispersing nymphs. We did a preliminary study and determined that almost 97% of the mealybugs captured in these are first instar nymphs. So we used parafilm and tangle trap and wrapped it around the branches. And for each plant, we put 3 per plant, 6 inches below the terminal. And the measurements we took weekly were males captured in sex pheromone traps and nymphs captured in walking dispersal traps. And after the trial, we counted the number of mealybug nymphs, adult females, and unhatched egg sacs. And we did 3 terminals per plant. And then, as I mentioned, we also evaluated a number of biocontrol agents, but didn't find any getting into the exclusion cages that they weren't intentionally introduced into. So we did 5 treatments and we did 5 replicates. The insecticide soil drench was Dinotefuran Safari and was selected because of its quick uptake. We used Parasitoid Anagyrus camale, which is released by Florida Department of Ag Consumer Services in their state-run biocontrol program. And we also did the predator, the mealybug destroyer, Cryptolamus montrezuri. And we did a sex pheromone, which I hesitate to call mating disruption, because as you'll see, it didn't really disrupt mating. So just a sex pheromone treatment in which we had 5 septa at 50 microgram dispensers per cage, so 250 micrograms total. And we also had an untreated. So here's what the captured nymphs, we have the mean cumulative pink hibiscus mealybugs captured, and these are dispersing nymphs captured in the dispersal traps, and the males captured in the sex pheromone traps. And here on the axis is the mean. So our top here we have our untreated, and as you'd expect, we got a pretty nice linear or consistent increase over the pre-treatment and 7-week intervals. So here's our pre-treatment, and then we had 7 weeks after treatment. And then following the untreated would be the pheromone, which again, we wanted to see some mating disruption, but in this semi-field condition, at the levels that the mealybugs were at, they did not disrupt or reduce any of the dispersing nymphs, so we captured quite a few nymphs. And then next we had parasitoid, predator, and insecticide. The number of males captured almost followed the same as the dispersing nymphs, with the untreated at the maximum with the most. And then next was parasitoid. So we got quite a few males captured in sex pheromone traps as opposed to the pheromone here. So the pheromone and the parasitoid flip-flopped. And then again, down here, we didn't capture many males, and we didn't capture for the predator or the insecticide treatment. Here's pretty much the same graph in bar format. So we got, again, this is would be the end, the mean number of total M. hirsutus captured in the dispersing traps for nymphs and the sex pheromone traps for males. So the untreated, 2,000 nymphs captured, about the same for the pheromone, and parasitoid was not significantly different, but it wasn't different from predator either. So over the entire trial, this would be about 1,000 captured, here a little over 500. And the insecticide, which is used in Florida and recommended for the zero tolerance policy for shipment of nursery stock, did not eradicate, well, you'll see here it didn't, next slide will show that, a couple slides will show that. But the dispersing, the number of dispersing nymphs were not zero. So we still had a few mealybug nymphs dispersing in spite of the insecticide treatment. But the predator and the insecticide were better than untreated pheromone and parasitoid. And the males captured in sex pheromone traps almost mirrored the number of nymphs dispersing, with untreated the same. But again, with all the pheromone, they couldn't locate the pheromone trap very well, but it didn't cause trap shutdown. Is that 9 minutes? Oh my God, I should have practiced a lot more. I need like 20 minutes for this talk. We didn't get a very good linear relationship. And the number of mealybugs captured after the trial, we had quite a few captured in the untreated pheromone, parasitoid, and the insecticide didn't eradicate it. But the predator was very good at killing the adult females, so it did a good job at eating the adults, but didn't do a great job of finding all of the nymphs. So if we look at dispersal versus post-trial sample, pretty much the same as what we saw in the first two graphs, and R-trap males representative of dispersal population size. Didn't really seem that way. So in conclusion, predator and insecticide treatments significantly reduced dispersing nymphs. Parasitoid, predator, and insecticide treatments provide a better control than pheromone and untreated. And males captured in pheromone traps were not consistent when management practices varied, nor were their relationships with dispersing nymphs or relative population size. So future research, effects of treatments under field conditions, and as well as long-term control. I'd like to thank everybody who helped, and I'd like to answer any questions you may have. Questions? Comments, concerns? Yes?
Do you expect to see any differences in your field trials with the capture of males?
The question was, do I expect to see any difference in the field trials with capture of males? Well, we've been doing a few field trials, and we still capture quite a few males when we release parasitoids. And for insecticide treatments, we actually saw quite a few males as well. So in the bigger field setting, you do treatment on a smaller scale, and then there's still males coming in from other untreated areas. So that's the kind of thing we're trying to figure out and sort through. Other questions? Yes, sir.
What's the potential for spread of this pest to other areas of the southern United States?
What's the potential for spread of this pest in the southern United States? So it's already spread to Georgia and Texas, and no, it's spread to Louisiana and Texas, and it could spread as far north. I have another map that shows it spreading as far north and having one generation all the way up to like zone 5. So climate zone 5. So it could spread if materials keep being shipped, but it'd be just less generation.